To generations of children, the name Crockett Johnson brings to mind a boy named Harold and the adventures he encountered with the help of his trusty purple crayon. Others may remember Johnson for his work on the popular Barnaby comic strip from the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. The National Museum of American History has in its collection a number of Crockett Johnson's works, but you might be surprised to learn that these pieces of art are actually geometric paintings based on mathematical theorems, a hobby that Johnson, in his later years, took up as a full-time pursuit. In this month's episode of the History Explorer podcast, curator Peggy Kidwell discusses Crockett Johnson's work and its connection to a renewed interest in math and science that took place during America's space race with the Soviet Union in the 1950s and 60s.
Well, I am Peggy Kidwell, and I am the curator of mathematics at the National Museum of American History. I have been working for that collection for about 25 years. One of my favorite set of objects in the collections are some 80 mathematical paintings that were done by a man named Crockett Johnson. Crockett Johnson was born in New York City, raised in New York City, then was a cartoonist and a children's author. And then, very late in his life, he started actually painting mathematical paintings that illustrated theorems that had been important in mathematics from as many as 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, or as recent as the very decade he was painting in. Crockett Johnson's paintings were part of a long pattern in his life of knowing what was going on in American history. During the 1920s, he was the art editor of Aviation, a magazine which became Aviation Week. 1920s were a time when an industry of aviation was just getting started. During the 1930s, there was a big depression going on. Crockett Johnson took a very active interest in ways of changing American society so that it would be economically more stable and more just. During the 1940s, World War II was going on. Crockett Johnson spent some of his time designing posters to sell war bonds. During the 1950s, there were a lot of young children around. Crockett Johnson, who had been drawing a comic strip, started writing and illustrating children's books. Then in the 60s, Crockett Johnson, like lots of other people around him, took an interest in learning about mathematics and the history of mathematics. Crockett Johnson himself may have been curious about theorems. More generally, Americans, after the launch of the Sputnik satellite in 1957, were really encouraged to take an interest in mathematics because there was a big need for scientists and mathematicians. And just because these were thought to be exciting times to live in when you might do mathematical and scientific things. One of the first signs we have of Crockett Johnson's interest and awareness of the new interest in math and science is this comic strip, Barnaby. Barnaby is a strip about a little boy who's about 6 years old and his various friends, one of whom is Atlas the Mental Giant. And Atlas the Mental Giant, you could tell was a mental giant because he carried around a device for doing calculations called a slide rule that used to be very important to engineers and mathematicians. Atlas the Mental Giant, by 1962, when he was asked if he could take a routine job doing bookkeeping, said no. He said, mental giants who can do long division and all that are in demand today, and all you want me for is a bookkeeper. And he said, no, I have better chances than that. So Atlas the Mental Giant had new demands on his attention. Crockett Johnson, the artist, thought he should take a new path in his work. The path that he chose to take was to go through a book by James R. Newman called The World of Mathematics, to look at the theorems that were illustrated, to pick out ones associated with famous mathematicians, to use those drawings to actually make related paintings. And one of the first paintings he did, late fall of 1965, was based on the Pythagorean theorem. The Pythagorean theorem is a very old theorem. It dates back to the Greeks, and it relates to the length of the sides of a right triangle. There was an illustration of this theorem in James R. Newman, The World of Mathematics. Crockett Johnson very neatly drew a rectangle around this and drew a painting that dramatically colored the various portions of the drawing. And this painting is very directly based on what Newman had drawn. His friends, who were painters, were a little bit puzzled by this activity of Crockett Johnson, who had not been painting before. First of all, he was using masonite as his base. He wasn't using canvas like many painters were. Secondly, for painting, he was just using ordinary house paint that you could buy at a local store. He wasn't using a special artist's paint. And thirdly, when he said he was doing geometric painting, he was doing geometric painting that was actually based on what mathematicians had done. He wasn't just drawing big abstract squares. And when his friends wrote about this, he wrote some letters back, and one of them describes this theory painting proof of the Pythagorean theorem. He said, "My paintings are neat and tidy, reasonably straight-edged and flat-surfaced, and have an irresistible appeal to people who like coldly intellectual abstractions and warmly emotional realistic art. They comprise a series of romantic tributes to the great geometric mathematicians from Pythagoras on up. In other words, the shapes and disciplines are pilfered, but interpretation, it is the greatest form of plagiarism. And besides, I am very willing to share credit with Euclid, Descartes, etc. At the worst, it's a slightly unifying gimmick for a show." I mean, by the time he'd been painting 3 months, he'd got 7 paintings done, including this one on the proof of the Pythagorean theorem. At this stage, Crockett Johnson's paintings are about theorems he's read about in a history book. They illustrate things like the Pythagorean theorem. There's another one that illustrates Kepler's laws of planetary motion, which is taken, again, very directly from Newman. And then he starts to get a little bit more complicated, going to a more complicated college geometry textbook, but he still is following the drawings that are in the book quite closely. Then he had a friend named Red Valens, who sent him a book that he had written called The Number of Things. And this was really the first book that Crockett Johnson read that came out after Sputnik. And when he first read Valens, Crockett Johnson did just the same thing he'd done with Newman. He put a rectangle around the painting, and then he reproduced it as a very attractive, very colorful painting associated with an ancient mathematician. But then he got a little more curious about what was going on. When he started reading about how you could represent curved figures in the plane by square figures in the plane, he got fascinated. And he started marking up his textbooks with numbers so he could follow the calculations. And when he started reading about how you might represent the area of a circle by a square figure, he really got fascinated. And he started trying to come up with his own proofs. Now, this was somewhat challenging because mathematicians generally agreed by this time that it was totally impossible to exactly represent the area of a circle by a square. And indeed, when Crockett Johnson sent his, well, he first sent it to Valens, and Valens said, "I don't understand what you're doing." Then he sent it off to a guy named Harley Flanders, and Dr. Flanders was a professor, and he was the editor of the American Mathematical Monthly. And he wrote Crockett Johnson, and he said, "I hope you'll understand that it's absolutely impossible for me to publish anything in the Monthly on squaring the circle, other than a possible new, very short proof of its impossibility. You have no idea how much mail I receive from would-be circle squarers, angle trisectors, etc. The publication of a single article in this direction always unleashes a real flood of new contribution. What is more, mathematicians simply are not interested in these problems anymore. However, Flanders knew all about Crockett Johnson's comic strips. He thought Barnaby was a wonderful comic strip. So he closed this letter by saying, I'm going to send you a copy of a really good book called The Projective Plane by a mathematician named Coxeter. And could you please send me the latest book, Barnaby Cartoons? So they set this up. Crockett Johnson then wrote off to somebody else, Scientific American columnist Martin Gardner. And Martin Gardner says, you're not going to be able to publish this in the monthly. But there's another journal that is for teachers, where the Mathematical Gazette, they might be happy to and willing to publish. So Crockett Johnson made some revisions in his paper. He went back and forth. And he eventually not only finished the painting, but published an article about it. And he was quite happy. This article was not a squaring of the circle. It was saying an approximation of squaring the circle. But it showed Crockett Johnson getting really involved in mathematical ideas. And what he then became doing in 1973, by 73, he was figuring out new constructions, still relying very heavily on his own geometric intuition, figuring out constructions that actually showed you how to do new things mathematically that were could be shown to be mathematically rigorous. And particularly, he showed you how to find the length of the side of a regular heptagon, a seven-sided figure, that could be inscribed in a circle. And he showed how to do this using a slight modification of Euclidean geometry. And this was a sufficiently exciting thing that it was published in a more highly thought of journal. So Crockett Johnson, in the course of his years between 65, when he started doing these paintings right in the middle of the Sputnik, and 1973, went from being somebody using mathematical drawings as inspiration to somebody actually thinking about mathematical ideas.
What was it about America at this time that really influenced Crockett Johnson's work and what he was doing?
There were two things going on, at least. One thing was that many refugees from Europe had come to the United States at the time in the 1930s, early 40s, because of the Nazi persecution in Germany, in Russia, in Denmark. I mean, really outstanding mathematics had come to the United States. These people knew that they weren't going to last forever. And so as early as the 1950s, they were worrying about how they could get a math curriculum that would encourage people to think about world-class mathematical ideas. This was a concern mainly of people who were very much involved in physics, mathematics, to a lesser extent, chemistry. Then, in 1957, the Soviet Union launched Sputnik. Americans had not expected that the Soviets would get a satellite into orbit before the U.S. did. They feared that what this meant was that the Soviets would be able to send a bomb over to the U.S. So there was a real concern about national security, and there was a concern about matching the achievement of the Soviets. And in order to do that, the government introduced a lot of programs to encourage study of math and science. Most of these programs were directed to people in middle school, elementary school. But there also was a flood of books for older people, and Crockett Johnson seems to have picked up on that one as well.
The focus was on getting students interested in math.
Right.
But people in general were just thinking this is an interesting subject to start learning about.
The National Museum of American History, which then was the Museum of History and Technology, when it opened in 1965, had a large hall on mathematics and another couple of halls on the various sciences. And these were meant not just for children, but for whoever came to visit the museum.
Now, some of the people that are listening to this might know of Crockett Johnson for a very popular book that he did.
Harold and the Purple Crayon. Harold and the Purple Crayon was one of the series books that he wrote in the 1950s. What I find curious about it in relationship to his paintings is that the character Harold goes through a whole series of adventures. when he decides to go for a walk in the middle of the night. And in order to resolve his difficulties that he encounters, he draws something so that when he goes outside and it's dark out, he draws the moon. And that's the way he solves his problem. When he gets stuck in the middle of water, he draws a boat and he gets into that. This is clearly fantasy, but it reflects the kind of attitude that Crockett Johnson showed in mathematics, in the sense that when he was trying to understand a mathematical problem, his approach to it was to make drawings and do then calculations based on these drawings. So I wouldn't stretch this parallel too far, but there is this, in Crockett Johnson, what you don't necessarily see in mathematicians of his day, this real emphasis on drawing tangible figures.
Thanks to Peggy Kidwell for taking the time to discuss Crockett Johnson and his connection to American history. For the History Explorer podcast series, this is Matt Ringelstetter. Join us again next month as we take another look behind the scenes here at the National Museum of American History. Podcast made possible by a grant from the Verizon Foundation.